Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air. This is the program where we bring you a range of conversations with interesting people from around the world. And today our guest is Isaac Bachirongo, who is the author of a new book called Still a Pygmy. Isaac is a Batembo pygmy, and he helped establish Congo's first pygmy rights organization before migrating to Australia in 2003. We feel very fortunate today in having Isaac join us. Isaac was born in the Congo, previously called Zaire, in 1961. Isaac, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, Isaac, there are several reasons why we're lucky to have this book. I know for one reason that your family wasn't keen for you to write the book. Why was that?
Yeah, because you know, the history of the pygmies, we have been very lowered, humiliated. And because of that, all around the world, even where we live, in our own land, we are humiliated. So that's why pygmies like to hide their identity. And for that reason, my family did not want me to write the book, because that will bring more shame, more humiliation on us. And they were right.
They were right. You have suffered as a result of writing.
They were right, because what they said, what we have been experiencing with other human race, is just looking at pygmies as inferior, incapable. So because of that, so any intellectual pygmy, any educated pygmy, try to hide that he is not a pygmy, because whenever the people hear that this one is a pygmy, they start to construct a kind of negative stereotype in their head. If somebody don't know who you are, he will take you as a normal human. But since they discover you are a pygmy, everything starts changing in their brain and in their mind. That's why, despite that, I didn't give up. I wrote my book. But I know, or I knew, that all the pygmies who hide their identity, they have a reason to do that.
I feel at a disadvantage, because just hearing you now speaking to us, English is probably about your fourth language, I think. I mean, I know you speak Kitembo, French, Swahili, Tutsi, Hundi, Lingali. How many languages do you speak?
Around eight languages.
Eight languages. And we in Australia struggle with the one in most cases, so that is an amazing effort. It's very impressive. Now, with you, your life, people in Australia are fascinated with a number of aspects. Your life in the Congo, your life as a refugee. What was it like living in the forests in the Congo growing up?
Really, as I wrote in my book, life in the forest, when I was growing, life there is not stressful, because there is no competition of material things. No one can pretend he is more educated than another one. No one can pretend he has more material, nice house, or nice things than the other one. So the life is just, you wake up in the morning, you go hunting, you can decide, what are we going to hunt today? Let us go for monkey hunting. All the old village go for monkey hunting from 5 years old to up, you all go there. The small one, so the kids will be clapping the hand, chasing the monkey in the net, and then you kill monkey, you do a feast at home that day. So, and everyone who participated in the hunting will have a piece of meat, even the one who was clipping the hand. So the one who owns the net may have more peace. So, but after that, you eat. The next day, you can say, oh, no, we still have monkey at home, monkey meat in our huts. What can we do today? Let's go for mushroom picking. If you have mushroom at home, you still can change. Let's go for fishing, because we don't have modern technology. So what we do, and what we used to do when I was in the forest, we just go to the small river, we deviate the small river from their bed, and when this is dry, we catch the fish who remain there, and then we turn back the river to its place. So, or if we can do that, we have some traps of fish. We put them in the evening. In the morning, you come to check if there is some fish or crabs who was trapped, and the life was going so on. If you can't go fishing, there is what we call caterpillar picking, because the forest has a lot of sorts of caterpillars, and those caterpillars are very, very rich in protein.
These are these caterpillars you're talking about, yes.
Yes.
Which is not part of our normal diet in Australia, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. No, in Australia they don't know it, yeah. So those caterpillars, we go, we collect, we bring home, we eat. So that's life.
Mm.
So, and there is no much problems like in modern life.
So but the real pressure is to have that meat, isn't it? It's a big
yes.
thing.
But and the real pressure is to have something to eat that day, not for tomorrow. There's no fridge.
No.
No fridge. The only way we keep for 2-3 days or 1 week is just to smoke it and to dry it with smoke. That if we have a big quantity of meat, because sometimes when we go hunting, we can kill a buffalo. When we kill a buffalo, that's the big meat for the whole population. So the remaining of the meat will be smoked. That for 1 week or 2 weeks, even for months, we continue to keep it warm on the fire, and so that can't be rotten. That's the only life. So that's the life in the forest.
Yes, and your wife, Josephine, I think she might still think that having family around and having food on the table is enough. But in your own case, I think you say in the book that it's never been enough. You need to have a position, a business, a job, something to keep you occupied as well as just getting meat on the table.
I envy the modern life and the forest life. So that pushed me to leave the forest just 1 month after. And went to Josephine's place, and I started my life there. Then I moved to the 2-3 years after, in 1985, I moved to the city, and I started my life in the city doing business. So until when what happened has happened. I was a bit prosperous. We got some buildings, houses, some cars. And then because of the war, everything we lost.
Yes, that's
that
there are a number of stories in there.
Yes,
We're going to take a short break now. And it is some music chosen by Isaac. It's by a band called Lule, and this is Pygmy Music.
daula na mabora shamafu hey unalili nyoso na radio RCB
musa namwe ebunu bwe mungu mwabunga be yasibuta fulabisha kanyangara ye ine yana chimalira ebatwa mwamuvanga we kwerunga nyimutula bula ko kunene dalola ko mbali hey wakanyamba ndana ubula esubali menze
journalist
era chikuka mwachondo mali wana batukire ne kuvande bunu mwabula ko wabula kunyi kwa tangano mire nyana mufukira
sanenda menye mukolo
la eko musana tachire kera kakata kaberetwe
yara senere kuyo mali mali
bende makonga banae wana sinda kwa basire
Shabula mbika na veshakali mabo shibombe
Alukira nara mwetumba ikira chino
Welcome back. So, Isaac, we were just talking about your adventurous life in the Congo. You mentioned that you started some businesses over there. It's different from starting a business here. You had to know the right people to bribe.
Yeah, that's true. Because human people, human rights is about the same. Where there is no bribe, there is a different problem, because the way people are selected to do business. So in Congo, they talk about bribe, but here there is other criteria which you find that there is also some, let me say, hidden injustice who are there. Because of civilized people, they will tell you you are not eligible, the eligibility. So here they create a lot of vocabulary to try to put you outside, if they want. But if they want to, you know, to lift you, well, they lift you. It depends on the people you meet.
Yes. You have been fortunate. People have taken you under their wing and looked after you. I'm thinking of Monsieur François, the Belgian, who used to drive you to school and actually paid some of your school fees.
Yes. Yes, Mr. François was in the Kitembo believes, the Pygmies believe that somebody who has helped you to save your life, that's a God, because they don't know that there is a God. They say anyone or anything which has helped you to lift your life is a God. I can say in the Kitembo, I can say that was my Ongo. Ongo means God.
Yes.
He was my God at that time. Because even now, I am speaking English. He is the base. He is the foundation.
Mm.
Yeah, he is the foundation. I don't know him. I can't remember him. That's about 40 years ago, or 30-something years ago.
Mm.
But 40 years ago.
Yes,
he was young now. He may be in his 90s or whatever, or died already.
Mm.
But really, I will never forget him. That's why I mentioned him in my book, and his name will stay there forever.
Yes, so it's wonderful that he was there for you when you needed him, because you were the only child in your family to actually go to school.
Not in my family. In the whole Pygmy village, we were about a few who went to school. But because of the discrimination at school, few of us attended year 6. Very, very few. But after 1 or 2 years, the other one can't bear discrimination, they just leave.
Isaac, it's Ken Thompson. Could you just briefly explain why the discrimination exists in the first place?
I think discrimination is a cultural thing, because some cultures, they think they are superior than other cultures. Especially those who are a bit modernized than others, they think they are on the top of others. So, and because of the human rights and those called the international laws against discrimination, they try to undermine, to make it smaller, but discrimination is still there.
Yeah, I was just wondering what the historical origin was of the discrimination against Pygmies in particular.
Yes, in particular, really, if you go to Congo or to Rwanda or in Cameroon, where the Pygmy lives in the forest, they never create a climate that can integrate Pygmies in the population. Because I don't know, I don't understand how they think that we are not like them.
So it might come down to one group thinks that the other group is not as sophisticated as them, perhaps.
Exactly.
And I think it makes the person that's able to do the discrimination seems to make them feel better, because when you came to Australia, some of the things continued over here, didn't they? I mean, you've still suffered with discrimination even in Australia.
You know, in Australia, I have had a very, very bad experience. Look, just an example. You are calling me and I am from home. I am home right now. I shouldn't be home. I should be somewhere just like you. Working, I am not disabled, and I have been home for many years, let me say 10 years. So,
well, I think if people read your book, they will realize what a doer you are. You are an absolute dynamo, and I think if anybody were looking for someone for a position, you'd have to recommend yourself, because, you know, if you look at your whole history over there in the Congo, where you set up businesses, things happened, you were successful in the businesses, so keen to contribute. I can only hope that the word gets out.
What you say is true, but myself, I never think that I am not eligible in any kind of job I can do. Look, here in Australia, they say if you want to work in a community service, for example, you have to go to TEF and get a certificate for diploma in community service or get a degree in social science, something like that. Isaac has done it and still not eligible.
Yeah, so the life of a refugee is still going to be difficult, isn't it? And I think you've met with Letty Scott, a local Aboriginal woman, and came up with some things that are common between Aborigines and Pygmies. I wonder if you could tell us about that.
Yeah, really. Scott was my... Scott Napanunga. She was my best friend. She was spending hours in my house explaining to me how they suffered, and we used to blame the human race because they have been mistreated by the European who settled here in their country. But back home, as Pygmies, we have been mistreated with the Bantu people who find us in the forest as the first settlers. When the missionaries and the Belgium came to colonize the country, they also come together with the Bantu people to mistreat Pygmies. And the Pygmies, the only defense we had and we still having is to run away from those people because they are very powerful. For example, we can't face them. So the only way or the only defense is to run away from them. And that's why you see them, that Pygmies in my country, they have run away in the deep, very, very deep forest and with no contact with other people. Once the contact is there, discrimination will start straight away.
Well, we have to get the word out from your book, Still a Pygmy, and we're speaking with Isaac Bachirongo, because there is such an ignorance about who Pygmies are and the people. One thing I want to ask you, Isaac, right through your book, there you talk about a lot of singing, both by you, by your parents, by the community. I wonder if you'd be able to just sing us a short song from one of your family stories.
Before we go there, I just want to tell you one the other thing, why I chose the title Still a Pygmy.
Yes.
And when I said that I am a pygmy, you know what happened? They said, no, Isaac is not a pygmy. We are Congolese. There is no pygmy who is educated in Congo. You will find no pygmy who have been to school. Pygmy are naked. Pygmy are in the forest. They came rarely with their forest products to sell to the Bantu people, and they go back to the forest. So Isaac is not a pygmy. He's saying he's a pygmy just because he wants to get some privileges from the Australian people. Do you know how much that statement had shocked me?
I can imagine.
Really? People who said that, you can see that they got a lot of support that really Isaac is not a pygmy. And I said the only way I can challenge that is to write a book.
And that it went from there. Well, look, it's a marvelous story. It's a saga. It's adventure story. It's got everything, and it's got a purpose.
So because of that, I said, even I am in Australia, I didn't want to hide my identity because I know some pygmies. So we are very few who have successful life, and those pygmies, if you call him pygmy, he can fight. Because of the stereotype surrounding the pygmy identity. That's why I called my book Still a Pygmy. Yes. And I put my old genealogy there. I put, I am pygmy from which part of the world? People who want to find out, they can go there. They will meet my cousin, my uncles. They will meet my our forest still there. And the history in our forest.
So, Isaac, yes, would you mind singing us one of your songs?
Okay. Okay, I can sing for you.
Okay.
Yeah, there is a hunting song, which is Karungwa rungwa tenga mwerungwe rungwe, 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 Karungwa rungwa tenga mwerungwe. So that's very old song. Even modern pygmies, they don't sing it anymore because they don't have where to go hunting. So
no, well, look, that's a wonderful song. So thank you very much for that. Well, look, unfortunately, we've run out of time. It's been fascinating talking to you, Isaac, and we wish you all the very best with your book, Still a Pygmy.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. So it all just remains to us, to Ken Thompson and I. We thank Isaac Bachirongo for coming on the program.
Thanks, Isaac.
Okay, thank you. You too. Thanks for involving me in this program.
Thank you, and we'll be back next week with another program of Dads on the Air.
Okay, thank you.
And just before we go, how about a little bit more of that pygmy music?
Yeah, well.